It's good to see a few people there who I know. I met Roger a couple of years ago over in Italy at the Anti-Racist World Cup, and your man over there as well. And it's good to see them, good people. No retreat. As I say, it's not the cover you're seeing on there. That was the mock-up. This is the actual cover. And the person on the front of the cover is our Dave, yeah. So he wasn't a general leading the troops from behind. He was in the forefront of it. He was a good man. Just let me say by a minute. This is Toddy. Toddy, you don't mind me saying, was once a National Front member who sort of like saw the error of his ways. And then became one of the finest anti-fascists. I think sometimes that can be. You've seen the other side. You've seen how it is. And I think sometimes people who come over. And sometimes the best and most committed anti-fascists. Well, anyway, the book focuses in and around Manchester in the late 70s, 80s and 90s. And as I say, I did my sort of stuff around about the 70s and 80s. Didn't mean that I didn't do anything in the 90s. It just meant that I couldn't write the whole book myself, because otherwise there was no reason for Dave to be there. But the thing is, that what Dave did and what Dave was involved in was absolutely key to keeping the fascists at bay in Manchester, because, you know, it's an important history. You know, it's not just about going around hitting fascists. A lot of people tend, and we'll come onto that in a minute, tend to think that that's all we were up to, and it wasn't, because, you know, we realised that there was a dual strategy. There was a two-tier strategy, and one was physically confronting him, and the other one was political organisation, because, you know, you saw the film there, that had to be on those levels. It's a largely untold story because of the violent and often unlawful activities that were employed, but it's an important history, as I said. The first chapter is about how I got involved, and there's no sort of like a great story. My dad didn't fight in the Civil War. I didn't come from a family, although they're good people. I actually ended up in the wrong place at the right time, so to speak. I was in the centre of town hoping to get a train to go and watch Man United play in Wembley in 1977. In those days, we used to quite often jib the trains, you know, a lot easier than they are now. And I saw this coach, which I presume was full of football lads and all that. And so I went to the coach and asked if they were going out to London for the game. They said, "We're going down to London." I said, "But it's not to the match. We're going out to London to kick some, you know, it's like to kick some niggers, you know." And I don't know about that, but I'll try and get on here, you know, give them a couple of quid, and then get off when I'm getting down in London. So that's what I did. I got on the coach and I said, "Oh, all right, I'll come along with you guys." The coach was a bit delayed because they were waiting for people coming in from other parts of Greater Manchester. So I said, if they just wait for me while I went to get a newspaper and a can of pop and all that, you know. And they said, "Oh, okay, no problem." So I got off the coach, went to a local newsagent in the centre of Piccadilly, and I just turned round to walk back when suddenly this gang of guys with crash helmets and bricks and bats and masks and balaclavas and God knows what else just completely trashed the coach. I thought, fucking hell, change of plan. I'll chance me arm with the Hectors, we used to call them, the ticket inspectors, the Hectors, and try and get down another way. So I kind of went up to Piccadilly. And I was just walking up there thinking, what the hell was all that about, when I kind of got scooped up off my feet. It was like, you know, what's going on? I mean, I was a lot thinner then, you know what I mean? I mean, a fair bit of keg I put on since that day. But nonetheless, I was, you know, kind of like, I thought it was like, who know these guys? And what it was these guys had said to me, you little fascist bastard, I didn't even know what the fucking word meant, you know. I said, you just got off that couch, haven't you? You're lucky, you. We're going to take you around the corner and give you a right good hiding. And I just, you know, I've not done anything wrong, you know. And I pleaded with him, and I was fucking like searching my pockets for my match ticket. Unfortunately, I pulled out an NF leaflet that one of them had given me. So, not a fucking great start, you know what I mean? And the other guy said, no, let's take him and interrogate him. We'll get some names and addresses off the little bastard, you know. And, you know, it was like, so they took me into this little cafe round the back of Piccadilly, sat me down. And I was ready to spill the beans on anything I knew, you know what I mean? I mean, these guys were coming in. Obviously, they'd been involved in that raid, taking off the helmets and all the rest of it. And I thought, fucking hell, these are naughty people, you know. I'm going to die. And I was already thinking, you know what I mean, like, this was it. And meantime, I'm like, you know what I mean, I was wearing trousers with lots of pockets and like these fuckers here, you know what I mean? I was like, where is the fucking ticket? It's got to be somewhere. And suddenly I produced this fucking ticket for the it was a charity shield against Liverpool. He pulled it out. That was my escape, get out of jail card. Because at that point, you know, I started to think, well, maybe it's all right. And what they did was, what I said was like, well, I'd got on this coach thinking I could get up, you know, for the game and then piss off. So then turn around, completely like 180. Was it 360 or 180? 180 in it, you go back to start. Is that? Well, fuck it. Never any good at geometry. But they said, right, well, okay then. I said, do you want to know who we are? And I said, please, yeah. He said, we're the Anti-Nazi League and we fucking hate fascists. And I said, fair enough, mate. I've seen what you've done. I'm pretty impressed, right. I thought I was going to die. I'm not. Thank you very much. The next thing, this coach pulls up, a little 29-seater. And this guy got out, and all these lads start getting on. And this guy said, listen, for shitting you up like that, we'll give you a free ride to London, and you can piss off and go to Wembley, yeah, if you want. So I thought, yeah, I'll do that. Got on the coach, on my way down to Wembley. I was listening to these guys talking about racism, talking about, you know, fascism, talking about, and I, when I was younger, I mean, I had some racist views, don't get me wrong, but I didn't like bullying. When I was at school, it was when Idi Amin kicked out the Ugandan Asian community, and we had some at our school, and they got some bullying, and me and my two brothers, right, we stood up for those kids. You know, it was just like, that was bullying, that's wrong. But, you know, it was like, it wasn't, I wasn't a political person, and it was like, you know, I just was into football and fishing and things like that, you know, that stuff and all that, and other things as well, you know, not drugs, no. So I get on the coach and I'm hearing all these things, and it's like, it's opened up my mind, and I'm thinking, that's fucking, that's alright, that, you know, said, guys, it's all alright, you know. We get down to Lewisham, because it was like, the thing is, they were going to Lewisham, it was 1977, it was like a march that they'd organised, which the police allowed to happen, so that's what they were going to do, go down there and oppose the National Front. They wanted two bites at it, they weren't just satisfied with it, the mayor, they wanted to go down there and kick some NF ass. I gets on the coach and I'm thinking, you know, these guys are all right. And we get to Lewisham, and I think, that's still a bit before kick-off. I rang about with these, they're all right. So we're on the coach. We get off the coach, and we meet some other kind of lads. And I said, I'll stick around with you, don't mind, you know. I said, no, you're all right. He said, I sort of like got involved in the general march type situation, but I was always conscious that I wanted to get over to the game, you know, so I was keeping an eye on the watch. Next thing, like, there's all sorts of carry-on and all that, people running off. But the NF started to march, right? So I'd learned a few new words. Fascist bastard, racist, you know, scumbags. And it was like, you know, so I was there. I could shout a few things. So as the march came, it was mayhem. It literally was. If you know, there's some good stuff on the internet about Lewisham and that. And it's, you know what I mean, worth a read. So Hamlet there going with my newfound slogans and all that, you know, fucking red, you know, rain, all that. And these lot coming by, and then this fucking guy suddenly looks at me and goes, in the NF ranks, he said, "You fucking bastard, you set us up." This was the Manchester branch who got fucking down there on another coach. He thought I'd gone on the coach and gone, not many of them, gone off the coach, tipped the wing, and they got filled in. I mean, it looked like that. So I'm like that, I'm all, you know, and then there's another few going by, and then there's this guy, "Where's that fucker there?" And this guy goes, "I fucking know you, you work on the fish market in the Arndale in Manchester." Dead. Shit, you know. So I'm thinking, should I get off? I think, bollocks, I'll fucking stay. I've got, because what I think I'll need is these guys to back me up when I start work on Monday. So I'll stick with these, you know. A bit cynical, yeah, but anyway, you know what I mean. So I stuck with these guys and had a fucking great day, honestly. I mean, I got a bit of a twatting off the cops. I'm with the back of my shoulder, and I was trying to think, I was trying to say to myself, is this a good idea? And I thought, that's alright. So I kind of like, sort of like, got off on it. You know, not, I mean, it's like, not got off on it in the sense like, you know, got off on it in that way. It was just like, you know, I mean, this means, you know, this. I mean, I've been involved in a little bit of football stuff. That was a young, you know, a young football fan's thing. You had to fight your way into some grounds. And I'm not a hooligan. You just, that's the way it was when you went to grounds like Leeds and Chelsea and West Ham and all that. That was just par for the course. Never considered myself in our case or nothing like that. You know what I mean? But I just kind of liked the comrade. I didn't know that word at that point. You know what I mean? But I liked the kind of the feeling of togetherness and like it wasn't like a. It didn't feel gratuitous, it just felt like that there was a fucking reason for this. I always remember being a kid looking at the Holocaust newsreels and all that, and saying, that's fucking bad news, that's wrong, that, you know, that should never happen, and that's, you know. And I was sort of like, you know, but never really had any political ideas. I mean, so I get back to Manchester with these guys on the coach, and it was talking, and the next thing, you know, I'm sort of like, I'm involved, and that's basically the introduction to the book. That's most of the fucking book, in fact. But after I got involved with the SWP at the time, they were kind of like, the Anti Nazi League was their kind of like thing at that point. In Manchester, we were having a rough time, you know. The NF, it was mainly the NF at that point, and the British movement, mainly the NF, they were turning over paper sales and left-wing working movement activities, and on one occasion, it was before my time, 1976 in fact, they went to UMIST, which is part of Manchester University, where a civil rights meeting was going on, and completely obliterated the meeting and put a lot of people in hospital. And including one of my closest friends, Graham Atkinson, and people decided that they're going to have to start doing something about it. You're going to have to defend your comrades and your class. So what happened was we formed what was colloquially known as the squads. You know, it was back, you know, stuff that was going to be carried out away from the mainstream, and it was about hitting back at these people. You know, there was no debate about what we had to do, and we followed in the tradition of, you know, the guys who and the girls who turned up against Moseley, you know what I mean, and in South Wales and in Cable Street and what have you, and it was that tradition that we wanted to be a part of, and we formed squads, and we did take them on. And you know, this thing about no platform, whether you agree with it or not, I mean, my view is, give it people, if they would offer it back to others in return, and the fascists wouldn't, they'd just take, they'd demolish the idea of free speech. We didn't always just substitute political violence for political activity. We did them both. It was a dual layer thing, you know. And one of the things that I learned, I remember reading very early on, was that fascism was a razor in the hands of the bosses, and it was dividing people on racial grounds. And so I got a class perspective on that, you know. I started reading things like a left-wing nature, like started reading books on Marx and Trotsky and those type of guys and all that, and it intrigued me. You know, I had a thirst for understanding like what it was all about on a deeper level. But I must admit that one of the things that I really wanted to get involved in was some of what had happened in Lewisham, you know what I mean? Because it was exciting, and it was like, you know, it meant something to me. And we took our inspiration from Cable Street, the 43 group, the 62 group. And, you know, we understood the words that also that Hitler said was that if they'd smashed us when we were tiny, then, you know, we wouldn't have been anywhere, you know, and obviously we know that never happened. Now, while we were doing the squad activities, I'd always been a little bit intrigued by the Secret Sam stuff, you know, the little, like, I love spy films and James Bond and all that. Sounds a bit dodgy anyway, but I wanted to, you know, get involved in sort of like other stuff, you know. So we started, we had a mate who had a bit of a penchant with making gadgets, and he made us up a listening bug. And I'll show you in a minute. We've got it here, like, it's fucking, it was state of the art, I tell you, not, you know what I mean? It was like, and we thought we'll go and put one in their meeting. So we started that kind of thing, and we were always one step ahead. And then we started to think about putting people inside. And a little bit later than that, maybe around about the late 80s, I was working as a youth worker in Openshaw, sort of like a suburb of Manchester, and one of the lads there, a lad called Phil, I talked to him about it. It was one of the few, it was quite a racist area, white working class racist area, and it was one of the few lads who didn't bother. He was just like, you know, he looked the part, but he didn't have a racist bone in his body. He was into hip hop and all that kind of stuff. Poor lad, you know. Anyway. I'm skipping a bit here because I could talk about all the things we did when the squad things, like when we used to turn over there. We had a football team called the Lily Whites, how fucking original, you know, and nobody wanted to play on the wing, you know what I mean, particularly the left wing.
Except me, I played on the left wing,
no one else did. Sorry, it was a weird player, I haven't seen
him. 5,000 crowns of anti-fascist attacking. Yeah. Honestly,
they were proper pissed off with it all, you know. So that collapsed, this kind of thing that they got into, like, you know, and remember, like, we couldn't find out where they were changing, that's because they were changing in a van, you know, a big loot and box van. And we came across it one day, and it sort of, like, fell over. And, you know, that's it. Thank God we didn't. We won't be talking tonight, mate. There's also things like City United. I love football, you know. I'm not just love my team, the United, and that. I just...
Have you got a thing? I thought about Dave. I'm just thinking about Dave at that time.
Oh, well, Dave, yeah. Yeah, well,
Dave was on the scene about late 80s and the 90s with the fanzine that we brought out, produced.
Because I met Dave.
Like, you know, like some early stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I met Dave in 85. He'd moved up, and I took a like of the Dave straight away. He just seemed such a regular, straight, you know, honest, working class guy who you just know he was going to be, he was solid, he was sound, and you know, he was a very capable, bright fella. You know, Dave was in AFA, and I was in AFA, but I wasn't really as active in AFA as Dave was. I was doing stuff with Searchlight at that time. I was kind of like doing a little bit of work with them, doing a bit of monitoring and stuff, you know. And, you know, I know it's not everybody's bag, but that's for another time, maybe, or maybe not, I don't know. But the thing is, Dave was doing stuff in the in the mid-80s to 90s, and was basically like organising all the campaigns that were happening, not so much in Manchester, but happening on the outskirts of Manchester, in towns like Wigan and Bolton and
Burnley
and Rochdale.
Yeah, all the satellite towns.
Yeah, all the towns there. And, you know, it was like, it was, you know, if only Dave was here, he could do it, you know, he could do it later. Anna, you know. Because in the book, you know, I mean, that's sort of like, get it right. There's the you know, I did some jail and that, and you know, that doesn't matter, like, and all that. But look at what Dave's, I mean, he's written sort of, you know, the best sort of like part of 140 pages. And you know, the books are there. We've got a few copies here, but if you want to read what Dave did, and, you know, then get a copy of the book, you can probably get it online, Amazon or something. You know, they were so important to the anti-fascist movement. Unfortunately, you know, and this is the thing that really kind of pisses me off, is that the left is so prone to sectarianism. And people, like, when they feel as if their contribution isn't being respected, then all sorts of things come into the scene. And a lot of them are pretty unpleasant, and certainly some of the things that people levelled against Dave. I know Dave, and I know what people said. It's fucking absolute garbage. And what people have said about me, you know, and particularly like they didn't like the fact that I was working with Searchlight. Well, you know, I can have that debate with anybody, you know. And I have my opinions post that about working with Searchlight, because it doesn't suit everybody, you know. And I was not happy with some of the things that, you know, that were happening. But I was always one for, you know, a broader base as possible. You know, that unity in action was what's needed. And I think Dave was of the same opinion. Anyway, I've never drifted away. I just kind of like did other things and got involved. I'm a shop steward for Unison. I work in a local housing trust. And Dave was always active in his community, where he moved to Brighton in 98, I think. And, you know, he settled into the political community there, and we kept in touch. He still came to the football. But we weren't obviously as active. We weren't certainly doing this stuff. I mean, you know, it's I'm not saying it's a young person's game. But it is in effect. You know. I mean, Dave, just to finish, was writing another book, which is more of a broader, and it was going back to the 30s, and he'd interviewed a number of activists and people around the scene in the 30s, and the other sort of like key decades, up to the present day. It was more of a wider sort of history of anti-fascism. He only had one interview to do, which Louise is going to complete soon with one person that Dave wanted to interview, but obviously he didn't have the time to do that. So that will happen. That book will be published, and that will be an epitaph, a suitable and fitting epitaph to Dave. You know, that's me. You know, if you want to ask any questions in a minute, that's okay, because you know I'm not. You know, I'm not an accustomed speaker. You know, so that's up to you. But I'd like Toddy to say a few words.
Yeah, I was just going to say, do you want us to do a few sort of words about Dave and
Toddy.
The fight of the BNP in the 90s in the Manchester area.
Stick that on me.
Yeah. Cheers. We've got somebody to do this. Right, yeah, if anybody's read this book, I'm contributed a piece at the end of it, just sort of, in the last chapter, Steve's saying about that the coach in Manchester. Well, it was funny because we were there on the same day, and it's sort of brief introduction how I got into the fascism, and then from the fascism into being an anti-fascist, and how I come to meet Dave in the 90s, and sort of what Dave's part in the book was, the second part of it was about the fight against the BNP in the North West. Well, the thing was, I was about 16 or so, NF came to the school leafleting and stuff, and where we lived, it's predominantly sort of white area, working class area, the East Manchester. So being a bit of a lad and a bit of a scally at the time with your mates, you just went along to the activities. Well, an old one, old enough to know better, man. Nearly 50, right? So, yeah, we decided, we'd go along to a few meetings, listen to the rubbish. He said, you know, they used to say stuff like the left were just, you know, gays and teachers and stuff. But, in, you know, the more we got into it, the more we realised that wasn't the case. You know, when you were getting a... knocked down the stairs at a grand hotel in Manchester with you know, the likes of Steve and his mates, you know, producing hammers and stuff, you know, like and other people. But, you know, they give you an option. They'd, you know, we'll smash you, or you can come and sit and talk to us and we'll talk about politics, give you an option and stuff, you know, because most then, you know, like the working class white youths were pretty naive politics, but pissed off with things that was going on with Labour Party and stuff and what have you. So just to get back on about the Steve and the coach episode, I was into the NF then, go to the meetings, and I was going to the march first. This is the idea, was I'll go to the march and that, get off and go and watch the football. I comes round the corner running late. I sees all these guys with the helmets and stuff, iron bars, smashing the shite out of the coach, and it was like, hang on, I'll go to the football match instead. So I was in the NF sort of meetings, different stuff, met different people. Steve said, I played left wing for the NF team in Manchester, so nobody else wanted to do it. So for a few years I sort of went matches, rallies, different stuff. And the deeper I got into it, the more I met people that were committed Nazis and stuff, and they openly said, once you got to know you, they were dual carrying members of other groups. There was a group at the time, a clandestine thing called Column 88. A guy called, it's in here, Brian Baldwin, he was the prison officers union spokesman at Strangeways, and he used to wear NF badges and put stickers on the doors of, you know, like black youth and stuff like that. I was also into the punk music and stuff at the time, and I couldn't really see any contradiction going watching The Clash and stuff, which were a favourite band, and they're singing about, you know, white riot people, white youth turning, getting on the streets and joining along black youth and stuff. I also went to see, I used to like Steel Pulse, reggae band from Birmingham. You know, I went to see them a few times, but... You know, that must have been some schizophrenia or something, whatever, you know. And then by the time the two-tone movement come around, I've been, looking at various papers, magazines, just getting more educated in politics, left-wing politics and stuff. So when the two-tone movement come around, I was well into sort of looking in, you know, thought it was, I knew it was left persuasion by then, and I was into the message that... the likes of the specials and what have you were singing about. So I joined a few parties and stuff like SWP and what have you. I was in them selling the papers and that, but it wasn't really for me. It was then the a group called Red Action were around. It seemed more working class based, left wing group. They were also anti-fashioned, sort of they'd stand and defend Republican marches and different things, you know, sort of. They were coming from a right angle. So I joined a supporting member of Red Action and Anti-Fascist Action. And that's where I came across Steve. And and Dave as well. Had a meeting with Dave. Took to him because we like the same music and stuff. Angelic Upstarts, Menzie, the lead singer, was an ex-skinhead. And they were like a socialist anti-fascist band. So that's how we came sort of into the fight in the 90s against the BNP when they were organising in the Northwest. And Dave, he was a great coordinator. He knew how to get people together, organise things, and also when you were there, think on the, you know, being able to think on the, on his feet straight away. Strategy is what we did on the day, you know, and great at getting publicity together, leaflets and stuff for meetings. That's like I say, that's where Steve was involved, and not totally by then he was a bit burnt out, but he was a useful source because he knew people and, you know, with the intelligence and stuff to get where, you know, get where the BNP was meeting, because by then they'd been they'd had a struggle for 10-15 years in Manchester, and Steve with his intelligence stuff, he always come up where right, the BNP are going to try and meet in this pub or whatever, so it was always one step ahead that way, so we'd get in the pub and whatever and totally take it over. We did that across the Northwest, places like Rochdale, Oldham, Burnley, where they had a lot of support, and they had support amongst the Burnley football fans, the hooligans and stuff, who they tried to use to back them up and stuff. So, as I say, with by then, with the anti-fascist action, you know, with Dave's sort of leadership and coordinating skills, we was always there at their venues, meeting places, and we'd always take it over. And they couldn't meet, march or whatever. And not just that, we'd put out a leaflet the week before, and we'd go leaflet the worst estates in Rochdale. You know what people said, the worst estates, because it was full of white working class scallies sort of thing. But we'd go and take a leaflet there, and we'd try and offer a bit, you know, an alternative, explain why you don't join the BNP, not just the Nazis, fascists or whatever, but the answer is not the right answer. So for most you know, for the years throughout the 90s, the fascists couldn't meet anywhere in Manchester. They never had no visible presence because we was always on the case, chasing them off the streets, whatever. And also at the time, me, Steve, Dave, we're Manchester United supporters, so we decided where we are and where's an audience. So we set up this anti-fascist United supporters fanzine called Red Attitude, which we had some really good success with that. We sold a good few hundred issues on a match day, and also it's people, United fans, knew, you know, seeing as that we weren't sort of the your typical left coming from outside doing a paper sale with a collection and then pissing off again, just looking for members. You know, we were United fans and that's where we was organising. I remember one match, what was it, the Chelsea Headhunters, the hooligan group that was affiliated to C18 at the time, they said, what do you call it, right, we're going to smash you off the streets of Old Trafford. So I thought, right, okay, you know, we're up, you know, this is, we're up for this, so we're there, you know. So we got in touch with the United fans, the sort of, what do you call the lot that used to be the United boys, the hooligans. I said, you can't come into this, the Chelsea lot of threateners, the fascists. So we just got loads of sellers and loads of people there to support us, like, you know what I mean, that we're willing to stand and fight the C18 fascists on the day. Gets sells more papers than ever, loads of people coming up and saying, yeah, all right, yeah, I'm with you. The Chelsea lot don't show. On the, what was it, a few weeks later in the magazine newsletter thing, they said that they were holed up in two pubs in Manchester. And we didn't have the bottle to come and find them. We were stood outside Old Trafford. You know, we were there ready to fight them. You know. Also, just, I nearly forgot there, like, about it. It weren't just people up, anti-fascist action was, you know, people just out wanting to fight a fascist. We also did it where other people that didn't, you know, that obviously weren't confident doing that, but also would do the man the phones on the day of marches in Manchester, say there was a Republican march, or there was a march in support of Viraj Mendes, who took refuge in the church in Hume and lived in there. He'd handcuffed himself to the radiators because the police were going to deport him. There was a big march through Manchester there in support of him, and the fascists threatened to attack that. So we got a sort of a group together to defend that march. We had lots of people on that day sat in various flats around Hume and Manchester, manning the phone line that we'd set up so we could get word of mouth where the fascist was. You know, it was days before mobile, so it took about 10 minutes, you know what I mean? But at least we knew where he was, so we'd be able to see him off the streets and stuff. So as I say, it weren't just like the physical force, everybody fighting the fascist. It was all the propaganda stuff that was backed up by it in the leaflets and what have you. People doing other organisations behind the scene. Also the music, and there was Cable Street Beat, anti-fascist action set up that, doing the gigs. Ska and punk bands like the Blaggers and what have you, who were an anti-fascist band from West London. They did a gig in Manchester, and a young lad who was into hip-hop and weird stuff, we thought he was Tricky from Bristol. He was on that. He'd done a gig on that. And Angelic Upstarts, as I say, Menzie was from Sunderland, anti-fascist oi band, punk, street punk band. When they ever used to do gigs in Manchester, we used to support their stewards and organise security. That stopped the fascists attacking Menzie because the BNP and the, what was it, the skinheads, what were the group called, Blood and Honour?
The screwdriver,
that Ian Bones lot said they were going to smash him off the streets.
Ian Bones?
Stuart Donaldson, sorry. This is the age now, I'm nearly 50, sorry.
Probably
a bit of Alzheimer's, no, I used to read class work. Subscriber, so right. The Blood and Honour lot, Ian Stewart, the screwdriver, they said they were going to smash the upstarts off the streets wherever he was, wreck gigs and stuff. So as the anti-fascist action wound down, we used to support the upstarts defending the gigs and that, and still doing the anti-fascist message. Up until recently, we were still at gigs. And then when Menzie got attacked by the fascist at a gig somewhere and decided to retire. But just...
Sadly
retired. Yeah, he's back on the scene now, yeah. But as Steve was trying to say, the fascists go through sort of changes and stuff and evolve differently. And like, because... our actions and our successes in the from the 80s and the 90s, they decided the tactic that was going to withdraw from the streets because they were getting beaten everywhere. They tried to march, they tried to organise. So that's why they went into that grow your hair and wear a nice suit sort of thing, because anti-fascists did this, you know, chased them off the streets. But unfortunately, you know, anti-fascist action was just a single issue campaign. There wasn't a, a left movement strong enough behind it, you know, to sort of jump in and, you know, jump into the vacuum and sort of offer an alternative, you know, to the working class that they were after, which is that's sort of I know this is what Dave mentions in the end of the book about that, about building a, you know, a proper credible left alternative to fight the fascists, and about doing the sort of thing where you go into scary estates and do a leaflet and you know, bring ideas into the area so you can sort of you know, educate people about why you shouldn't turn to fascism. Not, as I said before, not just because they're Nazis and stuff, but the dangerous political road you go down. So I'll just stand there, really.